This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Christy Schallenberger. Bethel municipal elections are today. Residents will choose four Bethel City Council members among six candidates, and voters will cast ballots for three propositions. One on whether to restrict alcohol under local option, another to decide the penalty for furnishing alcohol to someone under age 21 under local option, and a third on whether to restrict marijuana under local option. Polls on Election Day will be open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. today. Voting locations will be at the Lower Kuskokwim School District office in the boardroom and at the Cultural Center. Kusko Cab is providing free rides to and from the voting locations. Yuktun translators of the ballot are available online at cityofbethel.org. They'll also be available at the voting booths on Election Day. And in legal news, the AVCP Regional Housing Authority lost a civil court case last Friday when a jury found the agency responsible for over $3 million in damages. The male family's boiler had exploded in their home, and the home was built by the Association of Village Council Presidents Regional Housing Authority. KYUK's Greg Kim spoke with attorneys on both sides of the case.
In January of 2016, a boiler explosion injured Dietrich Mayle in his home in Chifornik. Here's Myron Inksman, who represented the Mayle family.
The boiler started whistling, and he went in to shut it off. And as he did that, as he reached for the switch, the thing exploded and blew the walls of the room out and blew the boiler into misshapen mess and then burned him with glycol.
The plaintiff's case included evidence that Dietrich Mayle suffered a back injury that prevents him from being able to work. The boiler had exploded because the pressure release valve was stuck, which allowed pressure to build up. The Mayle family argued that AVCP Housing should have been doing routine inspections, which would have prevented this. But AVCP Housing's attorney, Thomas Weathers, says there was no requirement for the organization to do such inspections.
The Housing Authority was following HUD guidance.
That's the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development.
And as it understood that HUD guidance, you stop inspections after 25 years. And the Mayles had moved in 1984.
Inksman argued the HUD guidance did not matter in this case, and the court agreed.
AVCP Housing and the Mayles signed a contract, and the judge specifically ruled that that 25 years was nowhere in the contract and thus was not part of this case.
Weathers says AVCP Housing will appeal this decision.
And then we'll let the Alaska Supreme Court ultimately decide how these HUD guidances or HUD notices should be interpreted and applied.
The jury in this case awarded $3.2 million to Dietrich Mayle for wages lost over his lifetime and for pain and suffering. His family members also received smaller awards for non-physical injury damages. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
And Crooked Creek will be getting a new runway. The U.S. Department of Transportation announced almost $16 million to rebuild it. KYUK's Greg Kim has more.
Crooked Creek's Tribal Transportation Director, Tim Zakar, says the existing runway dips in some parts.
In other sections where it's lifted up, so there's kind of like waves, not too safe for planes to be landing on, you know, a washboarded runway.
Donlin Gold Representative Christina Woolston stated the mining company had no involvement in securing these funds, although she said they have been training heavy equipment operators in preparation for this airport construction project. Zakar says Crooked Creek started planning for the new runway about 15 years ago. He says it took a long time for the state of Alaska to obtain the land for the new runway.
Land was owned by a native allotment owner, and he passed on, so he had a number of heirs, and they all had to, you know, come to agreement on it. And some of them didn't want to, you know, sell the land. They wanted to trade the land for, you know, another piece of land somewhere else, but the state didn't want to do that. They just eventually had to sell because, you know, everybody needs a runway here, so.
Zakar says with over $15 million, they can build a longer runway that's also lighted. He says that will make it easier to medevac people out of the village. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
And finally, one of Alaska's largest gold mines seeks to extend its life by a decade. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the Kensington Mine is one of Southeast Alaska's biggest private employers.
The Kensington Gold Mine is located 45 air miles north of Juneau in the Tongass National Forest of Alaska.
This video by Chicago-based Core Mining gives an overview of its expansion plan to keep the Kensington Mine open through 2034.
The mine was originally designed for 10-year mine life, and we've exceeded that.
That's General Manager Mark Kiesling at Kensington's office in Juneau.
And so, yeah, in 2024, we'll be out of tailing storage facility unless we do something different. And somewhere in 2022, we'll need additional places for waste rock.
It's applied to the U.S. Forest Service to increase its footprint in the Tongass by 150 acres. That would expand three existing waste rock storage sites and add a fourth to boost overall capacity by about 5 million tons. Kensington Mine employs nearly 400 people, with more than 40% living in Southeast.
We hope to stick around in the community. We plan to stick around. And through drilling and through continued exploration, we hope to find the additional reserves and keep people here in Southeast Alaska employed and working at Kensington Mine.
The mine's underground. After gold is extracted, the leftover mine waste, known as tailings, are kept underwater in Lower Slate Lake. The lake appears on company maps as a tailings treatment facility. That's through a legal precedent set in 2009 by the U.S. Supreme Court, allowing mine waste to be submerged in inland waters. But since the mine's now running out of space, the lake's dam needs to be raised by 36 feet. Critics like Guy Archibald say climate research projects heavier rainfall. He's worried waste could spill over into nearby streams.
What we used to call 200-year storm events are happening at a weekly or monthly basis nowadays.
He's a staff scientist of the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, one of the environmental groups that unsuccessfully fought court battles to keep Lower Slate Lake from being used as a tailings pond.
They're not considering global climate change. They're not taking the precautionary steps to prevent a catastrophic failure of that dam, given a 300% increase in precipitation, which is what is projected in some of these climate models.
But Kiesling says concerns like these will be addressed in the mine's environmental impact statement to come.
These are things that we'll consider as we go through the scoping process and as we go through the permitting process. So nothing is finalized yet, and as we go through the scoping process, we take these things into consideration.
There's a sister lake next to the tailings pond. Mine waste is kept out of Upper Slate Lake, but the mine's closure plan calls on eventually combining the two. Kiesling says once the tailings pond meets water quality standards acceptable to regulators,
then we would allow the lake to rise. It would be 28 feet up above the tailings, and we'd allow those two lakes to merge. And then it would just become one large lake.
But that wouldn't be until well after the mine shuts down for good. Kensington's proposed expansion plan is out for public review. The Forest Service is taking public comment through November 7th. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
This is KYUK News. Thanks for listening. I'm Christy Schallenberger. Send your tips and comments to news@kyuk.org and stay tuned for Yukden News coming up.